Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Imagine being told your whole life that the way your brain works is a problem, that you think wrong, that you don't fit in with the mold. And then imagine discovering that the very thing they called a weakness was actually your greatest superpower. Today's guest has lived one of the most creative, reinvented, fearless lives you'll ever hear about. From the Chelsea Hotel to Studio 54 to co-founding one of the most, you know, theatrical bands in music history to reinventing herself again and again across decades. And through it all, the secret wasn't thinking like everyone else. It was thinking differently. This is a conversation about reinvention, resilience, and the way our mind works might be the best thing about you. My guest today has lived many lives and she has reinvented herself in every one of them. Adriana moved from Switzerland to New York City at the age of 18, studied with legends like Lee Strasberg and Martha Graham, and has helped create the visual identity of the iconic band Kid Krall and the Coconuts. And since then, she's continually reinvented herself across music, fashion, streaming media, and digital culture, decades ahead of the curve. And she is a dyslexic thinker who turned a so-called limitation into the engine of her creativity. Adriana, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So happy to be here with you.
I'm so excited to have you here. Let's start at the beginning, because your story begins with something so many people, you know, are told is a weakness. You're a dyslexic thinker, and you said that thinking differently was never the obstacle, but growing up, dyslexia was rarely understood as anything but a struggle. What was that like for you early on?
Well, actually, in school, growing up in Switzerland, nobody knew what dyslexia was. There was no testing. There was nobody ever talked about it. All they realized is that in school, I was really good at certain things and really bad at spelling and certain other things. And nobody took the time to figure out why that could be, because everybody is too busy. My parents were too busy with three kids running a business, and they just got me tutors. They thought that would be the answer. Well, that didn't help, because the problem was that I was dyslexic.
Yeah.
And I barely made it through school. I didn't like school very much, except for the subjects that I was good at, why I was good at them, of course. And I was always very creative, much more than anybody else in my family or in my surrounding. And my mom used to tell me, oh my God, you're so creative. Why are you so creative? I can't believe you're so creative. Like everything, I would just come up with stuff. I would find things and put them together, make them into something.
Yeah.
Early on, my grandmother was an amazing seamstress, and she taught me how to sew, knit, and crochet. And that became very much a creative outlet for me that made me feel very important and accepted, because I could do something on my own and have and show a result without a teacher teaching me. It was my grandmother. And I remember a fun story. One day, she gave me some scrap fabric to make some dresses for my Barbie doll.
Yeah.
And I didn't like the print. She said, oh, you don't like the print. Okay. So here is a scrap of white fabric and some markers. You design your own print. I was like 10 years old.
Yeah.
And I remember that story. And that is such a wonderful story, because what she had given me was the acceptance of being creative,
right,
without judging the process or the schooling of it. There were no grades involved. It was just a lot of love. And I ended up later on in life having an accessory collection because of her.
Right.
Yeah. So I would say to anybody who has dyslexia or parents who have a dyslexic child, do not despair. Do not focus on school. I know it's important they finish high school, et cetera, et cetera. It is not important they go to college. It is not important what grades they bring home. What is important that you nurture their gut God-given talent and gift that dyslexics have.
Yes.
And that is the gift of dyslexic thinking.
Yes. Now, can you tell us a little bit about what dyslexic thinking is like? So people hear that, they say, what is dyslexic thinking? What is it like?
Well, yeah, most people think, oh, you're dyslexic. There's something wrong with you. Is there a pill for it? No, there's no pill for dyslexic thinking. There is no cure. It's actually a superpower. And why it is a superpower is because we connect the dots. We manage to see the whole picture while other people are still looking for the matching puzzles because our brains are wired differently. If you would like to know more about that, there is tons of research out there. You can Google it.
Yeah.
And one of my heroes is Sir Richard Branson from Virgin. He grew up with dyslexia and he became very successful. Steve Jobs had dyslexia. Cher has dyslexia. There is endless people who became very, very successful and very rich, regardless whether they finished high school or what their grades were.
Yes.
And again, because they became successful and I became successful the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't listen to other people. I listened to my inner voice, to my instinct, to my desire to create and to create my own vision, to really truly be authentic to myself. So I when I co-founded the legendary band Kid Creole and the Coconuts in the 80s, we became big pop stars. We traveled all over the world and we were known as the best live act in the world. And part of that live act was my contribution, which was the choreography and the costume design of the three girls that were like my contribution, my creation to the band.
Yes.
And I had studied dance since I'm 6 years old, and I've studied all kinds of dance. And I looked at all the popular dances that were around in those days. And the music I had to choreograph to was very eclectic. And I needed to choreograph something that was equally as eclectic.
Right.
And I studied flamenco, belly dance, Haitian voodoo dance, African dance, you name it. I went to study the anthropology of dance. Why do people dance, etc. I really became involved in that. By the way, in those days, you couldn't go study dance history in university, which today you can. I did that on my own out of my, again, desire to want to learn. And with all that information, I came up with my own dance vocabulary, my own creation that became quite known and celebrated. So that's my advice to any dyslexics. Listen to yourself. Listen to your instinct. Listen to what your brain, your dyslexic brain.
Yes. Yes.
Said. And it's probably right. And don't listen to somebody else who doesn't, who thinks differently. I mean, you can always listen to them because they may have a lot of common sense.
Yes.
But trust your God-given gift of being a dyslexic thinker. It is a superpower. It is positive. And once you manage believing in yourself and seeing that what you're capable of.
Yes.
And knowing that it is the opposite of a disability, you can shine.
Yes, that is so true. That is so true and so well said. Now, when did you begin to like sense that the way that your mind worked wasn't a flaw, but it was actually that superpower that you're talking about right now?
When I was unable to conform to what I was expected to live by.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in Switzerland, which is very conservative, and there's only so many jobs that were offered to me that I could have done. I didn't want to do any of them. I didn't want to be a banker. I didn't want to be a salesperson. I'm a creative. I wanted to be creative. Switzerland was not for creatives in those days. So I couldn't fit in anywhere.
Right.
So I needed to go somewhere where I could fit in, where I would have the options to study more and become the person I wanted to become, which at that point wasn't clear. Of course not, because you're young, you're just searching.
Yeah.
And I was 16 years old and my mother asked me, what do you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I want to move to New York and study the art of entertainment. And she said, not quite yet, because what if it doesn't work out? You need something to fall back onto so you can know how to make a living.
Right.
Good parent advice, right? So I compromised with her and I went to a private business school for 2 years and somehow got my diploma and moved to New York to the Chelsea Hotel. studied with Alvin Ailey, Martha Graham for dance, and went to Lee Strasberg Acting School.
Wow.
Then Studio 54 happened, and I was there every night. And I went out a lot because I love dancing. And for me,
yeah.
Is therapy. It's just an amazing release. And it was also a place to network.
Yeah, it was. Studio 54 was the place.
Definitely. Lots of stories there.
Yeah, I could imagine. Now, Adriana, you moved to New York at 18 and you've done, you know, headfirst and, you know, into one of the most legendary creative scenes in history. Now, you know, the Chelsea Hotel, like you said, and Studio 54, studying with Martha Graham and Lee Strasberg. Take us there. Like, what was it like to be a young woman immersed in that world? And how did that fearlessness, you know, that willingness to just leap, shape who you are, became?
Complete freedom. And excitement.
Yeah.
Every day was like being in a candy store. There was so many new encounters and stories and lessons. And New York was very different then. The Chelsea Hotel was very different then.
Very different, yes.
Yeah. But full of artistry. Lots of art everywhere. And we went out every night. I don't know how we did it because we took taxis. We went out to many, like five different places. You went to one opening of maybe a gallery opening. There you met some other people, and then you ended up at a performance art.
Right.
And then you ended up in a nightclub. I mean, it just went on and on and on. And somehow you were out till 4 a.m. and didn't spend hardly any money. Mind you, it helped that I was young and cute. But
that worked back in the day, yeah.
Still had to pay for my taxi somehow. Anyway, it was a very exciting time where it was possible to be an artist living in Manhattan, whereas today it's impossible.
Yeah.
So today there won't be any Basquiat's and Keith Haring's coming out of Manhattan, unfortunately, unless Mondavi is listening to me and he could make some rent-free studios available for potential new giant American artists.
I agree. Because right now it's very hard, especially for those young students who are studying. It's really hard to pay the rent in Manhattan for those young ones, for sure. Now, you've helped create the visual world of Kid Krol and the Coconuts and fusing music and choreography and fashion and storytelling into one experience long before Brandon was even a concept in music. How did your mind, the way you see and connect things, led you to build something that immersive and ahead at this time?
It kind of became organic. And the girls, the Coconuts, we were an integral part of the band. We weren't just background singers. We were a real intricate part of the band. A lot of people fell in love with us.
Yeah.
And a lot of girls wanted to be us.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just the guys ogling us.
Right.
A lot of the girls wanted to be us. So we portrayed this like strong feminine power, but you could be sexy and still powerful. And we had a lot of girls coming up to us after the show saying, oh my God, I want to be a coconut. I want to be a coconut. So I had the idea to have these underwear printed that said, I want to be a coconut on it.
Love it.
And we had them on the garter belt underneath our skirts. And in the middle of the show, we would pull them out, swing them around, and toss them into the audience at a girl. Hopefully, a girl would catch it. And they would have this, like, today it's you know, probably worth a lot of money because they only so many people have those underwear.
Yeah, right.
So that was a really great immersive branding moment that I came up with in 1981.
I love it.
For example.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. I love that. I love that so much. And what do you think people misunderstood about where the real creativity actually comes from?
If you're non-creative, you will never understand where creativity comes from.
Yeah, I agree.
I tell you where I think creativity comes from. It's downloaded.
Yeah.
It's downloaded. That's the only way I can explain it. You're the receiver. You're the somehow connect to that.
Yeah.
And hence why two people can have the same exact idea.
Right.
5,000 miles apart at the same time, which has happened again and again. Again, you can Google that if you want.
Yeah.
can only happen if the idea or the creativity already exists and you're downloading it and you're making it your version. You're expressing your authentic self in right. that creativity. But the way you receive it is really as a download.
I love that. I love that. And that's so true. That's a great way of putting it because, you know, people
you can't
who are
learn it.
No, you have to be able to see out of the box. You have to be able to be that visionary. And not everybody has that superpower.
And that's okay, too. I can never be an accountant.
Right.
You know, there's people who are very good at that.
Yes, there's people who are very good at numbers and you know, other things. And a lot of creative people would see that and go cross-eyed, you know. So it's
exactly. Same here. It's like, please don't make me do accounting. The numbers will not add up.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you ever felt like you don't think or fit like everyone else, you know, I want everyone in the audience to know that this part is going to change how you see that. You know, follow the advisor with Stacey Chalemi right now. Every week we bring you the bold, original voices who prove that the things that make you different are often the things that make you unstoppable. Now, what amazes me most about you is that you didn't stop. Performance art artist, you know, streaming pioneer, digital innovator, entrepreneur, producer, you reinvented yourself again and again while so many people stayed stuck in one identity. You know, how did you do it?
It's a natural process. I didn't have to leave the band. I chose to leave the band because my time with that chapter in my life was over and I wanted to move on and do something else with my creativity.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it just came to me again organically. Mm-hmm. So not everything has to be laid out. Not everything has to be planned out.
Right.
Have an open heart, an open mind. Know what you like, know what you don't like. Know what you're good at, what you're not good at. Helps you to then decide what is next in your life. For me, it was completely by chance. I had come back to New York City and I met my old friend Vivian Goldman, who is a music journalist.
Mm.
And she said, we have to go stop over and see my two friends in the Lower East Side. So I go with her and those two guys, young guys, maybe 18, 19.
Yeah.
They were on their computers and they were showing me the internet. And I'm like, what's the internet? What can we do this? Can we do that? I'm totally intrigued. I'm like, and I can do that. Oh my God, can I really do that? And they're like, yeah, I can do that. So immediately I had this brainstorm of an idea that I wanted to do a cyber cabaret. That's an hour long. That's a live webcast with seven different performers, all different types of performers from New York City, since New York City at that time was full of amazing talent,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So I needed to get a place that had a T1 line, meaning fiber optic line, that could actually carry a live webcast. This was before people had internet or AOL accounts or knew what the internet was, just like me. I didn't know.
Right.
Well, I found the Knitting Factory that was 1998, and they agreed. They gave me a little room once a month to have my cyber cabaret, and I had a camera in there that would do the live webcast, and I had a real audience, and it was interactive between the live audience and the cyber audience, and we didn't have a lot of viewers since most people weren't online yet.
Yeah.
But the ones we had were very interactive. And so we had the interactive part, which was in text form, projected onto the walls so the real audience could read their responses to our questions or whatever interactive aspects I would have in that show. So it really was the first ever live interactive monthly live webcast series produced and hosted by me in 1997 to 1998, actually.
Wow.
And that led to a whole other career.
Yeah.
I got tapped by the first streaming media group, which was by Globix. And I got tapped by two guys in there. One was 20 and one was 21. I was already 37. And they said, would you like to come work with us? And I said, I don't do corporate. They said, it won't be corporate. It's just us. We're the streaming media group. It's brand new. We kind of, you know, can blow up the space. I'm like, blow up the space? Yeah, I like that. They said, what vertical would you like to have? I said, vertical? I can choose my own vertical? I'm like, okay, well, I've done music. Let me do fashion. because I had a friend in Paris. She was doing all these fashion shows, and I thought that was kind of fun and interesting. So I then started working with Globex. That was a natural progression from what I did creatively to then becoming an actual job. Yeah. And ended up pioneering bringing the live webcasts from New York Fashion Week to the internet. And I got broadcast partners like CNN involved. I got Elle Magazine involved, later on Style Magazine. And, you know, it was a big hit until the dot-com bubble and that whole streaming bubble went.
I love it.
And then I had to reinvent myself. I'm like, okay, now that burst, what do I do?
Yeah.
I remember when I was 14 years old, in my town, there was a factory that made fabric. Beautiful silk fabrics. And they would cut the ends off and make them into balls. And I would go buy those balls with a big crochet hook and make little carpets out of them.
Right.
For the bathroom rugs and things.
I love that.
And I went home to visit my mom, and I went to see if they still had those. And I started making hats with that. Now that looks like fur. Recycled silk looks like fur. And I created a whole accessory line with that, waiting exactly until the whole streaming media industry would come back up, because I knew it was just a matter of time before everybody would be wired, which now we aren't, right?
Yes.
So for 2 years, I had an accessory business that I have to, again, thank my grandmother for having taught me how to crochet. And my hats and scarves and handbags and everything was made by hand in my studio in New York City, and I shipped to major boutiques all over the world, and was on cover of a lot of magazines. Jamiroquai, one of the big stars of the 90s, he wore my hat in Vogue.
Yeah.
So it was very well received. Now, this was a time, again, before the word recycled or sustainability was even in the vocabulary. People liked it because it looked good.
Right. Oh, I love that.
Anyway, so that was definitely, that's a story of resilience and reinvention. When one door closes, you have to open another one. You have to see, okay, what other talent do I have? What else can I do?
And
not believe the big picture and the dream. So me believing that this accessory line wasn't going to be something I would do for the rest of my life. I'm not going to sit in the living room crocheting hats for the rest of my life. Not what I had in mind, but it served its purpose for the 2 years. And then I went right back into streaming media when it became a new potential again. And I signed a distribution deal with on AOL. Mm-hmm. And I started covering all these events, and which is still something I do today.
I love it. I love it. And I feel like it's so important, like, you know, people that have a disability like you and I, that we tell people not to give up. You know, there are so many times I felt like, you know, I moved 3 steps ahead and I felt like I got knocked back 2 steps, but I never, ever, ever gave up. I was more determined to get right back up and to try harder and harder and harder, because I had a vision. And I was determined to reach that vision. And I feel like people need to hear that, you know, just because we get knocked down or we're unable to do something, or, you know, something comes in the way, that we just don't give up. We keep going.
Besides not giving up, because giving up is very permanent. And if you've only done it for another month, maybe you would have succeeded. So please don't ever give up. That's just not an option if you believe in yourself and you believe in what you're doing. However, do a lot of research and where you're at and what your dreams are and how do you get there?
Yeah.
For me, I don't ever had a manual because a lot of things I've done in my life have never been done before.
Right.
So when you don't have a roadmap, a manual, what do you do?
Right.
You imagine it. You figure out a way to create your own roadmap.
Right.
You do a lot of research, try to see where the industry is at.
Yes.
And how you can facilitate that industry in a better way than where it's at, how you can save money for the industry potentially.
Yeah.
It's always good. People like to hear that when you come with an option of like, hey, I can do that, but I can do it for less money. And this is how we do it, for example. So do I make sense when I say that? Create your own roadmap. Not don't always look for, how do I do that? How was this done? I love autobiographies, for example. So I get a lot of my power from other people's stories and other people's lives. How did they do it?
Right.
So I suggest the same thing for you if you're struggling with believing in yourself and if you don't find that you belong anywhere or you're misunderstood. Read biographies of the people that you admire, you love, and see the struggles they had. And they succeeded. So can you.
Very simple. Yes, it is. It is.
Perseverance, resilience.
Yes.
And always keep a smile on your face. Don't despair. There's no reason to despair. I have a rule that I live by. Whenever anything goes wrong, I go, nobody died. We're good.
Yeah.
It's that simple. How important can anything be if nobody died? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. I know what you're saying. I love that. I love that to death. Now, what allows you to keep evolving and starting over without fear? Because fear is something that so many people struggle with. And that fear is what stops people from evolving.
What are you afraid of? What can go wrong?
Right.
Failure? Mm-hmm. Do you know how many millionaires and billionaires today will tell you that they failed 5 times before they succeeded the first
time? Easily. Yeah.
So embrace failure, learn from it, and continue. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Exactly.
Don't worry about what other people think because they are not living in your body, in your soul, in your mind.
Right.
It's about you, is your desire, what makes you happy, not what society is expecting of you.
Right.
And it's never too late to start over. Even if you're a mother of 5 and everybody just flew the coop and you're like, oh, I don't know what to do. Think about what you always wanted to do when you were younger, before you had your 5 children.
Yeah.
Maybe now it's the time you can pursue that. Maybe you go back to school. Maybe open up your own business. The worst that can happen is you fail.
Exactly.
And with that, you learned a lot. So either way, it's positive.
It is positive. I love how you said that because so many people look at it in a negative way and it doesn't have to be negative. It gives us resilience. It gives us strength. I always believe that for everything that happened to me, I always pulled the positive out of the negative. And that's what keeps going.
Mm-hmm. And there is a positive in every negative. For example, you spend $10 for a lottery ticket. Right? You don't win the lottery. You can say, I lost the $10. Or you can say, I invested $10 in a possibility to change my life.
Yes.
It didn't work out. Maybe next time.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I love
it. It's all how you look at it.
It is. It's all how you look at it. And for someone listening who feels stuck or too late or afraid to reinvent themselves, what have you learned about the courage it takes to become someone new?
What does it take? Self-belief.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do not believe wholeheartedly in what it is you're going to do next, nobody else will.
Exactly.
Nobody else will even support you because you're not coming across as, this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
You're going to say, what do you think? Should I do this? Should I do that? Don't ask other people what you should do. They don't know you the way you know you. Only you know what makes you tick. Don't look for acceptance outside. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. That's so true. So true. And that's such a powerful statement, too. I love it. Now, let's speak straight to the people who need this the most, because I think this is your greatest message. Dyslexic thinking is finally being recognized as a real strength, nonlinear, creative, big picture for the parent whose child is struggling or the adult who spent years believing their mind was a liability. What do you want them to understand?
I want them to understand that their child with dyslexia is very special. You need to treat them differently than your other children who don't have dyslexia.
Right.
You need to listen to that child. You need to nurture that child's creativity and way of thinking. They are not crazy. They just think differently.
Yes, I love
and
that.
And if you want more information about it, there's lots of it out there available on the internet. If you would like to contact me and have a conversation with me personally, I'm not a dyslexic expert. I am just a dyslexic thinker who's had a lot of success in life, who can perhaps give you some pointers.
I love it. I love it. And how does someone start to see the way they think as a gift? It's a gift instead of a flaw and use it.
Education. Again, read up all you can about the Dyslexic University and its qualifications and why it even exists. It furthers the dyslexic thinking as a superpower and not as a disability, because it is not a disability. The only way it is a slight disadvantage is because most of us can't spell,
right.
But now we have AI, so we're good.
AI is great. Now, you've lived a life of constant reinvention, and you've proven over and over that thinking differently was never the thing holding you back. So when you look back at all of it, you know, what do you want people to mostly understand about resilience, about originality, about trust in the way their own mind works?
Trust in yourself. Believe in yourself. You are it. Don't look elsewhere.
Yeah.
You are it. You will be successful, whatever it is you set your mind to, as long as you put in the work and the belief and give it some time.
Yes.
If you believe in yourself, others will. That is the key message. I suggest meditating helps a lot to calm your mind and to receive creativity. Get sleep. Very important. Do yoga and learn breath. That also helps. And trust yourself. That is the key. Trust yourself. There will be a tomorrow. And you are the designer of your life. So design your life the way you want it to be tomorrow. It won't be tomorrow. But you know what I mean. Eventually, you will get there. And you
exactly.
will have you designed.
Yes, 100%.
And you have to put in the work.
You have to put in the work, 100%. It doesn't happen overnight. I think a lot of people in a society, you know, especially nowadays, they think, you know, they want rush. They want fast results, but nothing is fast. It all takes time, and you have to prove yourself, you know, and people pick up on that.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And don't take no for an answer.
Yes, don't take no for an answer.
I've been like that since I'm a little kid.
That's very powerful. Yeah.
The more you tell me no, the more I'm going to prove you were wrong.
I love it. I love it.
I'm despiteful that way.
Now, from this conversation today, if you wanted to like leave everybody with a couple of takeaways, what are some things you want people to remember from this conversation that you feel are very valuable?
Don't be afraid. There will always be a tomorrow for you. It is up to you what that tomorrow looks like. You are in charge. Nobody else is going to save you and make you the life that you wish to have. You cannot marry a man that gives you the life you want.
Right.
Only you can give yourself the life you want. Make it a good one.
That's powerful. Yeah, and very true. I love it. Can you tell us a little about your services and where people can find you?
Sure. My company is Addy.media, A-D as in David, D as in David, Y as in Yolanda, .media. And we cover a lot of events, and we do interviews of CEOs and celebrities, and we publish them on MSN, Yahoo. I'm a personal contributor to Getty, Red Carpet Videos, and other wire services. So if you're looking for press visibility in video format, reach out to press@addy.media. If you would like to know more about me personally, or would like to pre-order my book, it's adrianakagi@gmail.com. And my book is, of course, a musical memoir, but very much focused on my dyslexic thinking and why that helped me have the wonderful and successful life that I've lived thus far. And I'm not over yet. It's still a lot. Watch out. I have another chapter coming.
I love it. Well, for everyone out there, I just want you to remember that it turns out the people who change the world and reinvent their own lives are rarely the ones who think like everyone else. They're the ones who are brave enough to think differently and to keep becoming. And Adriana has done exactly that again and again. And today she reminded us all that the very things that make us different might just be our greatest strengths. I want to thank you so much for being on the show and telling our listeners where they can find you one more time so they remember.
Well, you can email me at adrianakagi@gmail.com. If you would like to get media exposure in video format, you can reach me at press@addy.media, A-D-Y dot media. Thank you. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. And it's been a great pleasure being on your show.
It's been a great pleasure having you on our show. You know, you are a very special person. I always say that the word perfect should never be in the dictionary. It should have never existed because nobody is perfect. Everybody has something. We just have to learn how to live with it. We have to learn how to make the best of it. And you've shown that today through all your accomplishments, through your determination to your ability to not listen to the word no and say yes, yes, yes. And I just love you. And I love the way you think. And I'm so glad you're here to inspire others. My deepest love goes out to you. And I'm so glad you came on this show to share your story.
And thank you so much for having me. And you have a wonderful rest of the day.
You too.
Bye-bye.